Dr. Scoyle spoke about questions and answers or whatever it is, so if there's any questions, answers, or whatever, I mean, yes?
Is there an issue maybe that also we have a hard time relating to the rules necessarily? I mean, the rules we've kind of grown up with are different rules, and all of a sudden aren't.
For instance, give me some example. I'm not sure. I'm sorry, what?
Well, our definition was legal and illegal. So you go to the business world, it's different than you go to the business world. The stuff you've been brought up in Shiva was okay and not okay.
Thank you very much. That's great. That also, it might be a point to, I mean, the Gemara speaks about you can't give a child, you can't give him a rimon instead of an esrig, because the asa lemisrach, he when he becomes an adult, that picture will stay with him. That was okay. It might be a lot of thought about what you want to condone in behavior if this becomes a permanent part of it, and the fact that the way things were done, when you teach a child to bend the rule, even if that case the rule was stupid, but once he loses things are made to be gotten around, then you create a problem, and you need to ask yourself twice if this is right or not. It's a good point. Yes.
A couple of years ago, there was an individual who was sentenced to federal prison for financial crimes, and his release from prison was widely celebrated in the Frum community. A rabbi in this town objected, saying that his release should not have been celebrated in such a public manner by the community, because what he did was, in essence, a terrific Chil Hashem. And that rub was roundly criticized by other elements of the community. It would seem, how does the Rosh Yeshiva explain in such a case, and there have been others, why is there not more widespread communal condemnation of these actions, and something like a call for, just like there was an internet asifa, perhaps there should be a call for a business asifa?
So, actually, on the second part, I know a Aguda had for a few years business asifa. They were called Dina Malchus asifas. And I actually listened to the recordings of it. I was in New York. They were actually they were very good, the lectures. I think, generally speaking, whenever it comes to big affairs, there's usually a swirl of different reasons why something happens a certain way. I don't know all the details of that case, and I've learned over years that when you're not directly involved, you usually hear bits and pieces. But in every case, there's a sympathy for a particular person. There may have been reasons why certain things were done. There may have been reasons. The celebration there's a problem with the public way it was celebrated. I'm still from the old school with thinking very clearly about what do other people think about this. So yes, you have a particular take on it, even if it's right. What do other people think about it? My father was still in a country where people actively persecuted, so Bemele, you're very sensitive to it. I wondered about that. I'm also the problem is on a public level, it's hard to give nuanced understandings. On the one hand, a person might have been a very good person, a very positive person. A person might have done a lot for people. A person may have been given a tremendous dose of suffering, maybe far beyond. On the other hand, a person did do something that wasn't right. At some point, anything that happens in a public arena is overdone in either direction. I do think just because somebody has done something, been sentenced, there's another part to it. If you know, and a person, you can resonate with a person's personal geula, and yet understand that there are big parts of it that need to be. But that was wrong, and you know, and so on. So I don't know. Once something becomes public, it becomes an extraordinary distortion to one side to another. I'm not a player, but on a personal level, just help us. I do think people need to bear in mind that person is a very positive person who really helped a lot of people, person who cared about people. The person's the what was leveled on the person was extraordinary by all accounts. The suffering that was, you know, there was a hatzala. On the other hand, there was wrong, and being able to balance those two feelings is hard enough for a person to nuance them. But on the publicity level, it's like the newspaper needs to write either a story about a hero or a villain. There are no people that are mixed. I don't know what to, you know. It's the problem. Anything that becomes public, it becomes distorted in any of the direction. Yes.
You've mentioned a couple of times you said it creates permanent damage.
Yeah.
When you start blending or blurring the lines between truth and, you know, maybe bending.
Yes.
It's not already there. What practical advice do you have for some of us who may have stumbled and fell flat and, you know, and made those mistakes?
So, I once heard from Yaakov Weinberg, and he, you know, when a person learns Gemara, when a person is learning Be'iyun, when a person asks himself honestly, so what should be the halacha here? So what's the din there? You retrain your mind. I mean, the first thing that a person can recognize it means that he hasn't been, that there's still something there that's very sensitive to truth. That in itself is extremely admirable, that a person is still holding there. And you see people will hold by two things that are absolutely contradictory, except the common denominator is both in his favor. You'll see people pushing for things that are in their favor, and then and you know, taking two contradictory sides of something. I think understanding that, and then the learning itself, if a person learns honestly, the core of Talmud Torah, like Gemara, is a search for the truth. So is this what it means? Is it not what it means? So how does it translate this pshat? So I think that Torah is meant to train a person and to get him to understand emes. And Bez Hashem. But I'm saying the fact that a person can look back and say, you know, I've been playing around too much, I think is an extraordinary statement of a person. Yeah? Yes?
Maybe to tie the first two questions a little bit, be more practical. I understand that, you know, when you talk about stories, I agree with you. But one story that I always remember was the story about the Jews in Russia. There was attacks between Jews in Turkey and Jews in Russia for tobacco, and there was a big rob, and he ran around Pesach. He couldn't find any chumas, but he could find everybody just smuggling.
Yeah.
So, you know, to me, that was a story where Jews in history, especially in modern, the last 500 years, the government was sort of the enemy.
Yes.
And the Jews had special taxes. They were always being persecuted. They would make too much money. They'd be kicked out of England. So we built this mentality that it was okay to deceive or disrupt the government, which I think ultimately then can, by what you're saying now, go over. So it seems even within Chazon Mishpat, there seems to be a dual honesty level between the Jews and non-Jews, and I think today's world, that can be very dangerous, especially now that we have Israel, it may be even more clouded because now you have a technically Jewish government, or whatever that means, right? So I think, you know, this idea of the stories, the double standards, a lot of it stems from it's okay to do something that's a certain group of people, not necessarily good for other people, and then it becomes clouded in the way you just do business in general. Any comments?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, I had, let's not go back, I mean, my parents lived in New York, they were older people, they were survivors, so the script of life was basically that you could not, it was impossible to live without lying because that was the reality there. I had a daughter and son-in-law who lived in Russia for quite a few years. They had a yeshiva, some of you might know, Kiva Yosevich, Olyakov, and everything worked with bribery. I don't know the Russian olim here. I mean, that was what life was built on. It was a reality. It was an unfortunate reality, and there's a pasuk that says, "Novati tavavim ikesh sispatol," that with a straight person, you deal honestly. With a crook, you have to go round and about. For instance, if somebody's holding a gun to your head, if you can lie to him and get out, then you have to do that. Life in Europe, I mean, I read that in Russia today, if you want to pay taxes by the book, you owe more than you earn. And that's why basically what it does is make everybody into a thief. And that's why it's a horrible society, because, you know, it's a society where there are no rules and everyone knows it's just a game. So basically you're back to an anarchy. But what we do have to, Baruch Hashem, we live in a society. Yes, it's not perfect, and it's not. But at the end of the day, it functions as a reasonably civilized society, and we need to consciously break away from it. You know, people that identify themselves more as American have an easier time with it. Other people still live like that. Yes, it's true. That's where a lot of it came from. But we have no choice, because what will happen is we'll never be able to build a decent society. If everything is underhand, then you have no society. And there are no countries run like that have healthy economies and societies, because it's basically a mass anarchy. We need to teach our children whatever was. And in those situations, you know, if you cheated a Nazi, if you told him you're not Jewish, that you weren't committing a crime. You know, if you got hold of a potato and ate it and saved life in Siberia, that was not stealing. That was doing what was right. But Baruch Hashem, we don't live like that today, and we need to re-educate ourselves and our children. We have no choice. You're right as far as the background is, but tachlis, there's a world. Yes.
The thought has been floated that, to the extent that people live amongst a foreign nation, so like the Rishim is saying about building a society, so to a certain extent, if a person doesn't feel like a member of that society in full, and that this is the society I'm looking to build, so then there's not that same feeling of obligation to that society.
Well, there's a big difference between obligation to negation. In other words, we appropriately don't feel ourselves as American at the core of ourselves. We're Klal Yisrael. But not feeling American has nothing to do with not acting honestly. And acting honestly has to do with being Klal Yisrael. And the fact that you don't feel that your life's accomplishment is helping build America, and you feel as a guest in America, you know, when I'm in somebody's house, I'm a guest, I still can't take the silverware. Even if I'm not interested, I have no interest in this family becoming wealthy, but taking their silverware is not recommended. It's not a very, very...
No, just the shadows, it could just be a contributing factor to...
It could be. We also had, you know, it's interesting. We didn't have, in Europe, it was, in Eastern Europe, the people around you weren't barbarians. And the question was how to deal with it. I can't sit in modern America and say how people should have dealt with them, because they weren't. And you know, it would be naive of me to think. But one thing I can say is there's no justification for it over here. You know, it's I can understand why we got to where we got to, but that doesn't become an excuse. An explanation is not an excuse. Yes?
Yeah, I'd like to switch a little bit not to business, but some all the Good Israel conventions at Baruch Torah never spoke about it. And I left a message on the first night that I moved here to Chicago, they had a Public Square Heritage, an adventure for Shmuel Kamenetsky came in. I didn't have a chance of speaking about that. However, Rabbi Rothschild gave a whole speech there, and I didn't have a chance to speak to him, so I left a message. I've been in through the yeshiva system, and I left BMG 10 years ago. And I've seen I've seen a lot where, former yeshiva-like, and both, from the working field have, yelled at workers, being a Vazvin, Barabin, right before Yom Kippur, the Mexican, put two things in the bag. And he's a manager, it's out, screaming at him, why I pay 10 cents for each bag? And he raised it's out, so he's the prominent manager, but I've seen it many places happen to me and others where, plus I don't understand, I assume that a person could, a boss could come into a business and fire a worker just for no reason. However, especially as, Jewish from people, Rachmanim, to fire somebody without pulling up a rug. And I think in America, where Shmuel Kamenetsky is very much, I think, the biggest one to ask, if it's a Shiloh to try to throw the Jew off the streets, not having a baby, not having, pampers to wear, or paying rent or something like that, or to scream at a Yosin that they stole, which wasn't really his fault, but to fire him. Like, I've seen this over and over, and I don't think it was ever spoken about how if a worker needs to be reprimanded. So I would say every Friday, what would happen, take him to the office and give him a nice spoon, but scream at it and this and that, and I've seen it all over, and I've never seen it spoken about.
Well, I did write about it in the book, so yes, as he said, this is a very wonderful segue to advertise, but I didn't come, what? I don't want to mix business with pleasure, so the answer is yes. It's like everything, every time there's a tzibur has a challenge, it takes people to keep pushing the agenda. It's, what happens is people work with inertia. In my life, I've seen many positive changes in Klal Yisrael, and it always took anything. People have a comfort level of doing what they're used to doing. If it would be spoken about more and pushed more and so on and so forth, the answer is yes. The problem is, like you mentioned, a whole bunch of things that are all upsetting. You'd have to learn how to quantify and explain, these different behaviors. Like I said before, you need concrete models. The common denominator is they're all extremely upsetting but you need more concrete models. That's one issue. I also would take an issue with something that you said about asking Shmuel Kamenetsky. There's a tendency today that every problem goes to the God Lador. It's a real problem, because what happens is you're asking a shaila to somebody who may not have the time to hear it totally, who doesn't know you, doesn't know the people involved. Do we not have anybody but one person in America, one person in Israel? I mean, the Torah, the Akdama to Torah is, sorry, I love him, sorry, Maya, sorry, this, sorry, that. I would speak about this. There's an advertisement that appears in the Modia on a regular basis. I forgive them the parnassah, the modia, and it's a wonderful thing that they have parnassah. But it goes as like this. I asked Reb Chaim Kanievsky what to do about all the tzaras in America, and he answered, Xaviat Kotche, they should say Yom Kippur Cotton. Now, who is this person who went to ask Reb Chaim Kanievsky? He doesn't have a rav, there's no rabban in the city. They're the ones that ask the question. My father's Chayin of Racha grew up in Kovna. Kovna was the Ir Ve'im Yisrael. It was a very, very strong, it was a big Jewish community. The Dvar Avraham was Kovna Rav. The Varma was a very big Talmud Chacham. He was a nichbad b'yosa. When he would walk in the street, the goyim would stand at attention. He was a very intelligent person. There was no way that a person in community could ask him a shayla. The Rabbanim sat with him every whatever it was and asked the shaylas. Every person has a rav, should have a rav. Going straight there is not an eitzah, and that's why I would like to think that the person should ask a shayla. That's correct, but this habit of everybody asking it doesn't produce great things. It has so many downsides to it that I think it's one of the problems. Yes.
You kind of touched on this, but how does one, one of the greatest, things that you have is the ability to rationalize.
Yeah.
And so,
tell me what?
How do you, keep yourself, leveled where, we can rationalize away anything. And you also can't, on the flip side, you can't call a rub every 10 minutes, right? How much should I owe the Mexican guy? What about the, right? How do you, keep yourself straight with the kind of posturing for yourself throughout the day, especially when it comes to Dina and Mamanos, and keep yourself honest that way?
The first thing is, if a person at least has a list of things that he had a suffix about, a person has, it can't be that you run every 10 minutes, but you accumulate over some time things that you felt you're not sure if you did right or not. And at least if you're open enough and willing to ask about it, then that itself is something that will allow you to correct yourself. And usually these things are patterns. So if you find yourself doing this again, so sit down and ask somebody who's your Rav, and get a feel for it. Okay.
Nobody's asking, I'll ask a second question, but if somebody has I want to just tie into this thing, because the Spucker magazine wrote a great piece about a month ago about Joel Wasserman, who's a former professor at Harvard Business School now at USC, and he talks a lot about best practices. So if you really try to build a great business practice, you don't yell at your employees. If this is not a great culture you build. You want to build a great culture and a leading company, right? So I think what we lack a little bit, except for certain people, is people that really understand how to build in the business world, because a lot of it, doing the right thing actually is the most profitable thing as well. That's just the way it is, right? But either people have knowledge of the Kashmir Mishpat, come out of the yeshiva world, and get into business, don't always have the knowledge of building great organizations, like that said. Or on the secular side, you have people who know a lot about building great business, but don't understand the nuances of the Jewish world. And I think ultimately it would be great to sort of mesh the two sides, because in the reality of it, you don't fire people without just cause. It's not a good business practice. Forgetting about what the halakha is about Jews and having food for Pampers, it's just not. Employees don't want to work in fear every day that they're going to lose their job for no reason, or because your brother-in-law needs a job and you're going to fire this guy and hire your brother-in-law. It's not a good way to build a great organization, right? So I think there is a measure where you can actually meld these two things together and actually make more money and do the right thing at the same time, right?
Fine. The problem is what happens, two things. So if somebody sits and lectures to me how to build a great corporation, okay, but I have a deli and I have a worker who has to do the 100 deliveries out of Shabbos. So, in other words, I'm not building a big corporation, and if I squeeze the person more for more work and this and that, I seem to be gaining. There's another part to it where a person needs to understand is it right or is it wrong? And the Rambam, such a powerful Rambam. The Rambam says, even though technically a person can insult an Eved Knaini, the Rambam says a Jew is a Rachman. And he says, and it's a Midas Achzorius. So it has nothing to do with the Eved, it has to do with you. And the Rambam says, and he says, this is one of those powerful arguments. He says, we stand in front of Rabbi Shalom and we say, Ke'ene Shifchal Gevirta. Kene Eved Al Adonov. We're looking at you like an Eved is looking to his Adon for mercy. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, yeah, and So I'll treat you the way you treat your effort or your grip. It's one of those powerful arguments. It's good if you can add the sweetener that at the end of the day this is good business practice. But it's an additive. It's like the people who explain that kosher food is healthier for you. It's helpful maybe, but sometimes there'll be a conflict. To make that case about Cholent is not an easy case to, you know.
You know, you had the story. You remember the story of moving Purestein in Boston?
Yes.
I mean, there's a great story, right?
That's a very good story.
His plant burned down right before Christmas, and he paid all his.
Correct. That's a good story.
That was a great. I don't know if that's Chasam Mishpat didn't necessarily require it.
It's the way a Yid should act, but it has nothing. And I don't know how his business went afterwards. I think just. Stressing the moral component is very important. It's helpful sometimes, like it says, you know, the return to her. If you say, in the end of the day, the business also proves. But as Yidden, I think the emphasis should be on that. Yes.
In my experience in finance and business world and sales and whatnot, there's many kinds of gray area.
Yeah.
And it's a very difficult area to navigate. So the example that I see, and I think a lot of other working people see, is, you know, there's a lot of conflict of interest in business.
Right.
And how to navigate that. For example, the company is saying sell service, product X, Y, Z. And you realize the client, probably the best thing for the client is X. And the company say you need to sell Y. You don't sell Y, your job is on the line. And it's not bad for the client, but X is better. And you're constantly in a situation where you feel and your conscious is saying, X is better, X will pay me more, X will pay the company more, but Y is probably the better choice for the client. And you're always, you know, and you're saying, well, I should do the good thing and sell Y, but then you'll get reprimanded. But if I sell X, it's not, clients can be paying more, clients need this, and you're constantly in that cycle. And you're constantly trapped. So you're either underperforming or you're not doing what the company wants. It's almost avoidable. So how do you navigate this? Like what you know? I know it's a very specific question, but it's a kind of constant in the business world, and especially in sales. Is it wrong to sell, or is it better to listen to the client, to the company? I don't want to
Paskin Shaila here. It's not the right setting, not the right. But this is a very, very important halacha. It's a very important Shaila. It falls under Lifnei Iva. It falls under being, you know, Ya'atznura. It falls under many other categories. You need to sit down, ask a shayla, with somebody who understands the fields. You need to know, is this something that this is where you should draw your parnasa from, if there's no way around it? It depends, are you pushing it as one of many different options with advantages that it does have? So even though the big picture is, if he were to make a cheshbon, take everything into cheshbon, maybe something else would be better for him. But as long as your presentation is okay, you're telling him, you know, the miles of your product, without not lying about it, that's a different story. It really depends on the details, and you know, it may be that it's something that a person should stay away from. Yes, it's unfortunate. I know this is very true about different health insurance plans and things of that nature, where people are buying something they really don't need and it's not an advantage for them. So in the big picture, it depends a lot about what your role is. Are you leading somebody, or are you emphasizing what's good about the plan? And you know, and so on. Your person needs to think twice. Even if halakhically will say that it's okay, do I want to spend my life to the detriment of people that I'm serving? You know, at the end of the day, it's something that you need to sit down with the details with somebody that you see as your Rebbe Rav and go through it. And I understand, Shaila, it's a very tough Shaila. Yes?
Kind of touching on what Ami was saying as well in a different way, I feel like one of the biggest challenges in the business world, especially in a secular business world, is that everyone needs to be very laid back and very casual about things. And that automatically right then and there is sucking people in to drop their guard. And there really has to be a proper balance in terms of, okay, how much do I want to play the game, so to speak, in terms of just being very laid back, be able to schmooze with people. Schmoozing can get so casual sometimes that you're no longer acting the way that you feel like is appropriate to act, but that's the way that people are doing things. That's the way that it's expected to be able to act in that role, especially in more of a management role, because you have to be able to interact with just about everybody. So where's that balance? I mean, obviously we want to be able to be thinking properly, but when you're so immersed in that world, it's a little more different, like we're talking about. It's much easier to rationalize, but at the same point in time, you do need to be able to interact with just about everybody.
So, on some of the areas, and someone talked before about Professor Wasserman. Professor Wasserman has a brother, big Talmud Chacham, Harvard Law School graduate, Ari Wasserman, who's written a book, Making It Work, and he's about to put out another book about women and their special issues in the workplace. Well, he touches on a lot of his halachic issues and a lot of his practical issues. I would highly recommend it. He doesn't give psukim. He goes through the different challenges, different approaches people have used, and different approaches as far. It's a very honest and structured work. He's amazing. I guess part of the decision that a person makes before, you know, when he makes the transition from a very insulated yeshiva world to the outside world is, how much do I want to be part of the society? It is natural for a normal person to want to be fully integrated in society around him. And it takes three things, saying, let me see what that line is. I'll never be like them. I will never fit in. If a person wears a yarmulke, which is good, I'll be different. So in New York, a yarmulke is, you know, it's par for the course, so, you know, it doesn't put you... But I will be different. And the compensation for what is going to have to be the merit of my work. That's the only thing I can do to make me... They're going to say, you know, this guy's a little bit of an oddball, but doesn't mix well, but he really does amazing work. That's the only way we can compensate for it. But we pay a price for, you know, for the havdalah ben Yisrael la'amim. We're moved up. We're different. And part of it will have to be, and so certain things like a yarmulke is a thing. So you wear a yarmulke. How to act so that I don't become one of the guys, and yet I'm chilled out enough that I could work with it, and would be very nice if people would have people who've gone through the workplace, have done well, and yet have retained our people that are admired, to speak about these things. And again, Ari Wasserman writes about a lot of these things. He's been there. He's been in a law firm. He's in business. And today he mostly sits and learns, and I think he has investments and stuff. But he's been there, and he writes about, and he's collected, especially the book about the women. He actually interviewed dozens and dozens of from women in the workplace and presents their challenges. And there's a lot of differences of opinion in terms of what challenges were strong, how to get around it, what did they find challenging, you know. But at least it gives a person a sense of it. But you're right, one of those things you're going to have to predetermine and make it clear to yourself is, I will always be an odd man out. There's no choice. There's, you know, and that's why we're different. That's why, you know, we're one of the havdalas. We're as different as light and dark. Yes, maybe one more question for someone we didn't ask. What? No, and I know there's a myriad of issues, so yeah, well, sorry.
It seems that a lot of conflict arises from our interaction with the legal system and with the boy. And although I agree with that we're here as guests more feet, but what is the model? Maybe you can help us model this particular scenario. What is the role which the Jew, and what is the model, the ideal, to which the Jewish Balichuva or a from person is expected to live up to when interacting with the legal system and the goyim, in as much as it seems to me that some of the justice and some of the evolution of civilization came through our light that we brought to the goyim.
Right.
So is there, can you help us model, like you said in the story, what is there an expectation?
Well, Bnei Noach are commanded to have a legal system. It is one of the Zionism now. As long as the legal system is reasonable, and you know, in halacha, in the big model, a tendency towards being authoritarian is fine, even if it's kind of harsh and strong. But society needs to be held in check. It needs to be ruled. So as long as it's reasonable and fair, you know, as they speak about Dina Malchusa, as long as it's reasonable and fair, it's you living by them obligates you to abide by it. The problem was, like they mentioned before, there was a time when it was not, I mean, reasonable and fair were words that no way could have fit the laws in the good days in Eastern Europe. But today, I don't think, you know, with all the complaints and everything, at the end of the day, I cannot imagine any rational person making the argument that it's not, it's not reasonable. So they're supposed to do that. That's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to, halachic, people make a mistake. The halacha, I don't want to go off on it, but the system of mishpat in Klal Yisrael, Chayshe Mishpat, is on a much higher madrega because it's not about keeping law and order. It's about emulating HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And actually, again, it's late, I'm not going to go with it. We augment, the Ran speaks about this, the Rashbi speaks about this. The ideal situation was Sanhedrin would paskin halacha alpi chesh mishpat. The king was making sure that there are no gaps, that people are getting away with it, and he would enforce authoritarian rule on those things. So this was discussed a little bit when they founded the State of Israel, the pre-founding it, that Chaim Ozer wrote about, referenced these halachas. There's a need to fill in with practical laws to keep law and order. So as long as what they're doing can be understood to be that way, we need to go along.
Do you think that some of the evolution of, let's say, American society is far removed from the Mitzrayim? It still has many of the elements, but it's certainly a lot more just, probably, than the Mitzrayim. Do you think that the role of the Jew in the society is to shine some of this light, to allow the society to go in to learn from a little bit from how things are supposed to be done and which level to aspire to for the going to show them? But
my chinuch, our chinuch has been that, yes, we're supposed to shine a light. The way we shine a light is by glowing. In other words, to go around with a flashlight, shining in other people's faces, was not the way to go about it. If a Jew acts, if an Orthodox Jew acts the way he should, and he's working with non-Jews, and they say, you know, this is a man of his word. This is somebody who doesn't play around, doesn't fool around. It's somebody who's got his strange laws, but he never, ever bends corners with it. That's a light. You know, big shining projectors last very short and don't do much. Somebody recently spoke to me about they want to make this huge, nothing about your type, something else, this huge gathering of proclamations. I said, that stuff is nonsense. You know, it's one by one by one. If a person acts the way he should act, that is a light for nation. And even if two people saw it or three people saw it, but if everybody would act like that, it would have tremendous. If people would say, yeah, if you hire these Jews with the cap and this and that, they're kind of strange, but you know, a word is a word, and an hour of work is an hour of work, and there's something and never raise their voice, and you know, they're always civil and so on and so forth. Believe me, that would be a tremendous light for the nations, maybe even for us. You know, that it might even actually. Okay, Seder.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.